Welcome to the Student Ministries Podcast. I am Kate Kim. I'm the Discipleship Coordinator for Watershed, which is the high school ministry of Perimeter Church. And today we're going to talk a bit about the church and the family and how the church really supports and comes alongside the Christian family. And today I have with us Jimmy Kim and Sarah Merrick, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Thanks, Kate. Hi, I am Jimmy Kim, the Executive Director of Family Transformation here at Perimeter Church. I've been here for 12 years, though I am new in this particular role, a long time in Watershed and in student ministries. But I am married, have been for 17 years this May. We have two kids, my wife and I do, a 12-year-old daughter and an almost 8-year-old son.
And my name is Sarah Merrick, and I'm the director of Kids Thrive at Perimeter Church, which is our children's small groups here. And I have been in children's ministry for 10 years now. And I'm married to my husband, McLean, and we have three kids, a girl who is 7 years old, a boy who's almost 5, and we have a newborn who's 3 months old.
Awesome. Thanks, y'all. Thank you so much for giving your time to have this conversation. Really, I wanted to talk to you just about the ways in which the church really comes alongside the family, and you're both have so much experience in that. And from children to teens, we are specifically talking about students, you know, ages 6th grade to 12th within this conversation. But I wanted to ask you, what challenges do you see the Christian family facing today that they didn't face 10 years ago?
I can start. So our 12-year-old, she's in middle school, and certainly we've seen this before she got into middle school, but the demand on her from culture and from her peers to be actively engaged in things around technology, things in voices speaking to her from like voices of authority that speak to her outside of the family unit. And so that's mm-hmm. been an adjustment for us. And coupled with all of that is just the pace and the busyness of life. There are a lot of distractions out there and a lot of things that are vying for our attention. So I would definitely say that those are some of the biggest things that we are wrestling with and foresee us wrestling with throughout, their middle school, high school careers.
Right. How would you say those distractions that you talk about, how does that impact your family?
Yeah, it makes the time that we have together feel very limited and finite. Mm-hmm. If we stop to think about how much time we're going to have with our children from now until high school, it can feel like either a lot of time or not a lot of time at all, right? It's like the ticking clock in the back of a room or a countdown clock somewhere as you're watching a game, and you just get, the more you look at the clock, the more anxious you feel versus actually being able to focus on what needs to be communicated or what needs to be done in the course of a game. And so I think that is a big thing for us. It just feels like I'm running out. And then certain days it just feels like, oh, I've got plenty of time. And it's really, how am I guarding that time? And how are we as a family protecting that time together? And how do we make the most of it?
Yeah, I can see with that increased pressure of social media, of things just vying for our attention. There's just more and more. You think about shows, you think about social media, you think about just everything that fosters more anxiety, especially in creating comparison traps, and not just for the kids, but for the parents. Like, social media is a place where, for me, I mean, in my own personal experience, I've gotten on there and just, you know, I see other families participating in things or doing extracurricular activities that I'm not doing yet. And with my kids, and I think like, oh man, like, should I be doing that? And it creates so many comparison traps. And I think that's very different than it was 10 years ago, where we are confronted with more things. Families are, children and parents. And it's just hard, you know, there's more to shift, to sift through. And that can, I think, create a lot more anxiety these days.
Yeah, I constantly think about my own experience growing up, and I was fortunate enough to grow up in the church. And I remember having that close-knit church community where we would go to potlucks and we would have picnics, and I knew our church people, you know, and it felt very simple, and there was a lot of warmth and comfort to that. And sometimes I long for that, you know, I miss those days. But then I also think about the incredible resources that I have access to now, you know, at a place like Perimeter or, and just in general, because of our digital age. So there's both the blessing and the curse, right? There's the longing for that connectedness and that simplicity, but then also we have access to so much more now, and we have more knowledge than maybe we did when I was a child. Sarah, you talked about social media and anxiety, and how that impacts the family. What are some practical tools you would suggest to families to help them minister to their families in a digital age and in an age of anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that families these days often, I mean, my family included, we often get like caught into the hurried pace of life, and it's hard to slow down, and personal connections become secondary. Like, you know, it's easy to connect via text, via Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, but those personal connections do kind of get put to the side. And so I think as Christian families, especially, we need to seek to connect to those in our church, our friends, even family. You know, connecting with immediate family can be hard these days. So it becomes, it takes more effort, you know? I think one thing that I have found personally, and I've seen it amongst other friends too, is having something on the calendar, whether it's biweekly or monthly, or, you know, just something consistent on the calendar that always shows up, whether it's a play date with other families, or a craft night just for the moms, something that it's always there. You're always, you know, welcome to go to it, or you're hosting it, or you know, it's on the calendar. And sometimes you can't make it, sometimes you can, but I find that it's forgotten otherwise, if it's not, you know, we all have our calendars close at hand, and it's just helpful to have something regular on the calendar where you are making those personal connections with someone else.
I love that intentionality piece. And my suggestion for families, well, one, it's easy to listen to something like this and feel like, oh, it's too late, or I feel guilty, I haven't done this. And I just want to say an encouragement to anyone that's listening, especially the parents with older teens, that it's not too late to show the intentionality to your teenager. It speaks volumes, whether they realize it now or not. I was just talking to someone else recently about this, about getting your driver's permit or your learner's permit. And I noticed that my relationship with my mom skyrocketed because of a selfish desire that I had to log hours in driving. And that was something that we had to do when I grew up, and where I grew up, you had to log a certain number or hour of drive time. And so I always convinced my mom, I was like, we need to go drive. And sure enough, what are we going to do when we're in the car? Right. The radio options were either listen to the radio, which my mom didn't want to do, and my mom would want to listen to sermon tapes in Korean, which I didn't want to do. And so we would just talk, even though there was a little bit of a language barrier. There were certainly cultural barriers. There were generational differences as well. But we found opportunity to talk. And that communicated to me at that tender age of 15 that my mom was available to talk to me when I was ready to talk, right? And so that can start when your children are really young. That can start when your children are about to leave for college. It's interesting how we can often hear some amazing parenting advice from from common grace sources. So my wife was talking to a coworker of hers who has older kids in college or preparing to go to college. And one of the things that she said, they're not believers as far as we know, but it was a great reminder for us as young parents that when your teenager is ready to talk to you, you stop what you're doing and you talk to them. That can be at 7 in the morning as you're getting ready for school, maybe hurrying out the door, or that could be at 11:30 p.m. when you're exhausted from a long day, but they're ready to talk. Now, that takes a lot of humility and a lot of patience. It certainly requires a lot of strength and energy, and I believe a lot of the Holy Spirit in us. And so how are we as parents praying to the Lord and saying, God, give me the ability to listen and stop and not respond in frustration? So making ourselves available, certainly being intentional about that and not growing discouraged and perhaps feeling like you started too late. I think it's never too late to be intentional with your kids. And again, no matter how old they are. So while Sarah and I have young kids, and even you too, Kate, it's easy to think, okay, well, I'll wait a little bit. And maybe the conversation right now is a little bit too heavy for an 8-year-old or a 7-year-old or a 5-year-old. But you can still start now and develop those rhythms. Mm-hmm. And so maybe one last practical piece on this to cap this time is find, like Sarah said, whether it's you put it on the calendar or not, but what is that time when the family is all together? Is it dinner time? Is it breakfast? Is it a day like on a Saturday or on a Sunday on the Sabbath, and you are intentionally asking one another questions, you're being patient with them. Maybe it just takes a lot of energy to do that. And so my call to moms and to dads is to be intentional, but then even own up to the fact that we're not perfect. You know, a lot of times our teens would benefit from parents saying, hey, I'm sorry. I apologize that I haven't been intentional, but this is what I want to do. And I would love for us to start doing this together.
Yeah. And with that, you mentioned that being, you know, like to talk when your kids are ready to, when your teenagers are ready to talk. I think that applies to children of all ages, because every, you know, kids go through different stages. And my daughter's in one where she desires and craves that time of talking. But then my son, who's almost 5, I mean, he will not talk in the morning, but he talks and, you know, he wants to open up in the evening, and that's not when I want to open up. Mm-hmm. So it's very true. Like that applies to children of all ages. And also, like, I would add that everyone has seasons of life. Some seasons are more difficult and, make it harder to connect, whether within the family or outside the family. And I just came out of a season where of pregnancy and just a really busy time with work at the church and just some personal things going on in the family. And there were days where I could, you know, I did not have the strength or energy to connect at all. And those are days, I think, where the Lord really wants to grow us in our prayer life and in our dependence on the Holy Spirit to just daily ask the Lord to just carry your family through it. So know that, you know, as we talk about these things, we're not experts, and there are seasons where I think we need to give ourselves more grace and just be reminded that it's the Lord who carries us through when it is difficult to connect or parent well.
And I would say I love that you both brought up, you know, it's not too late, and there are times where you feel like you have no energy to connect. And I think one of the most powerful things we can do for our kids is to say, I'm sorry, you know, and to really repair when maybe we've erred. And just modeling that for them is really huge, and having the humility to say, hey, I was short with you earlier, or I have had a really busy week, and even communicating to them sometimes, you know, and this is, I'm putting my counselor hat on for a second. I've mentioned this in other podcasts, but I also have a counseling degree and practice part-time. But I think one of the really powerful things that we can do is to, like I said, model that humility to say when I've erred and to practice that repair of the relationship, you know? Well, thank you so much for y'all's input on that. And I want to kind of transition into what role does the church play in the life of the family? And then what role does the family play in the life of the church?
Yeah, this is something that I know, Sarah, you and I would agree with, as well as you, Kate, and we've been saying this for years, that parents are the primary disciplers of the children. Right. And so, and I think at Perimeter, that is something that is widely practiced. I feel like less and less expectation that the church has to fix my kids or the church has to fix us as a family. We are a resource engine for sure. We definitely have qualified leaders and volunteers to help shepherd families and to do some of the work of discipleship, but this is a partnership. We are not here and exist in isolation from one another. We have to work together. I know data has been around for years about this, but a lot of youth workers would say that there needs to be 7 healthy adults in order for one child to have an ownership of their faith and to see success, quote unquote, success in their adulthood. Now, how they measured that, I have no idea. But as I look back in my life, obviously you have parents, you have grandparents, aunts and uncles, you have teachers, you have coaches. And for me, a huge part of my spiritual growth happened because of my youth pastor and the volunteers in the youth ministry. So, and it's not because they were preaching something entirely different from what I was getting at home, right? But it was this place where I discovered, okay, wait, it's not just one person, like my mom telling me this or my dad telling me X, Y, Z, but it's multiple adults who are invested in me. They have a care for me, and they are also pointing me somewhere. They're not pointing me to themselves, but they're pointing me to the gospel, and that's what I needed. And sometimes I just need a different perspective, right? And I think that's where this partnership has to really flourish. So my challenge, and this is something that I'm living now as a parent of a 6th grader, right? There is a level of intentional discipleship that's happening at home, not, hey, let's sit down and do the journey together or do this Bible study or do this book study together, it's, though sometimes that can be the case, but it's through how we handle hard things, through how we interact with our siblings that we may not like very much at the moment, through difficult life circumstances or when you're exhausted, like how that's all discipleship, right? Is life on life discipleship. But then there is something that her D group leader at church can provide that mom and dad, though we're saying the exact same thing, my daughter will hear her more clearly than she will me. And a lot of times that's how discipleship is, or it's is spiritual formation and life formation. And if we're not intentional about it, then something else is going to fill in that void. And so I don't want my daughter to be formed by the broad culture around her or the technology that's available to her or even her peers to a degree, right? I'm not going to cloister her from that, but at the same time, I'm going to be intentional about pursuing her or my kids. So it's kind of like is both a defensive and an offensive mentality to the discipleship or to the spiritual raising up of our children.
Yes, absolutely. As you said, Jimmy, totally agree that parents are the primary disciplers and the church is such a great partner to that. Just in providing a place of worship, a place, you know, of course, a church is not just a building, it's the people. So like you said, the people, other believers surrounding the child or the student as they grow and just being an example to them. Love all of that. I think also sometimes something that is forgotten is that the church is a place where children and students can safely practice and sort of live out. Like it's a safe place where they can make mistakes. They can wrestle with things that they're wrestling with that have to do with their faith. They can ask questions. And just like you said, with the example of your daughter, Jimmy, the family, sometimes it's not the safest place for the child to wrestle or to ask those questions. And so, in a healthy church environment, you know, the kids are able to practice and live out and struggle in a way that they, where they know they'll still be prayed for, they'll still be cared for. And it's also a place to serve, you know, to learn how to serve and to minister to others and to, think of others before yourself, or look to the interests of others and not to your own, just like the word tells us to do. And, it's just a place where kids are able to start put that into practice.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to say that as well. Just the model that you're setting for your family and for your children to serve, right? And thinking of creative ways to go about doing that. I remember back last summer when we were gearing up for the church-wide a food drive, one of the things that my kids said, this I guess a couple summers back, because it was, I think the call was on online church when we were still, you know, having to meet distanced. And they were like, oh, food drive, what's that, Dad? So I'm going to tell them what a food drive is. Well, is it for us? Do we get to keep this food? I'm like, okay, that's, I'll make a mental note of that. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that another time. But no, this is for people who may not have access to the food or don't have money for food, or, to help an organization that provides those services. It's like, oh, well, I want to help. Can we go to the corner and like put up a sign and a table and help, you know, collect food that way? I was like, absolutely. Why don't you go make a sign? And typically when I tell them, hey, why don't you go do this? Their first reaction is, no, I don't think so. But when it was their idea, right, and I told them, hey, this is what you can do. And sure enough, they sit down for 15 minutes. They work on these signs. They're actually helping me carry things, which hardly ever happens. They are manning the table. They are waving at cars when I can't even get them to say hi to, like, their family members when we see them in person. And so we saw them light up in that kind of service. And that's one area. How can we do that in the church? How can we continue to practice that and find different ways? And because serving definitely looks different in different capacities, different stages, but Right. Giving them that opportunity is important.
Right. And that plants seeds at a very young age. You know, I think about my own experience in the church and doing Samaritan's Purse or Family Tree with my dad, and we would go shopping at Christmas time. And that really instills these ideas of, I wasn't thinking about that as a child. Like, look at what my dad is doing and look at the values that he's instilling in me. But there was that tradition and there was that modeling that's so important that the church really set up for us to do as a family together. And yet at the same time, I think about, you know, kind of going back to this idea of the role of the church and the family. And it really does take a community of people to, as y'all both said, to really support the family. And so that the family's not growing and developing in isolation, but when something comes up, when a conflict comes up, when a crisis comes up within the family, that you have the church body to come alongside and support one another. I think that's so huge. There's a nonprofit organization called Safe Families for Children, and they do that. They basically, in order to help vulnerable families who might not have access to kind of the church body and community that we do in churches like Perimeter, they have volunteers who come alongside vulnerable families to support them and to help them so that they don't continue in this cycle. And so that's just a very practical application of how the church really is vital to the health of the family, but in the same vein that the family is vital to the health of the church. Mm-hmm. As you're raising and discipling, and y'all both have a history in discipleship, you know, as we're discipling the next generation, you're really training up believers and church members and elders, and really kind of they both go hand in hand. And you both kind of started in on this idea of how does the family be missional today? But do you have anything to add to that of how do we live missionally in the world as families?
I alluded to this earlier about this mentality of cloistering or setting up a bubble or protective fence around families. And certainly there are certain things that we absolutely need to protect our families from. There are a lot of things out there that will come to sabotage the family unit. And without getting too much into the weeds, I do think it's important to be engaged in the city that you're in, the neighborhood that you're in. I'll use our own life as an example. So the previous home that we used to live in, great neighborhood. We loved our neighbors. We loved that community. But one of the things that we noticed that it was not a walking community, in that people weren't out and about. And especially at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, that was all you were able to do. It was either stay inside your house or go outside and play in the backyard or walk around the neighborhood. And we just didn't see a ton of that. And so we certainly made an effort to go and do that. And we were able to connect with the people that we did know. We looked to meet new people as well and talk to them from across the street or from, you know, several from a safe distance away. And then when we moved into the new neighborhood that we're in, we noticed that it was a very different type of community. And now I'm not encouraging people, if you don't have this, then you need to go move. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is, based on the activity of your community, right? How are you matching that, or how are you intentionally pursuing that as a family? Now, we've got a dog, so I'm oftentimes the one who is walking the dog. But there is oftentimes lots of suggestions from me to the rest of the family. Hey, let's go out and walk the dog together. And guess what? I think there are two things that you could be walking around in your neighborhood and your neighbors will stop and talk to you. One is a dog and the other is a baby. Right. If you're pushing a stroller, someone's going to come over and say, oh, hey, you know, I'm sure you guys have, you know, recognized this. And especially if you have children, you guys are walking around, someone's going to stop and say, hey. And that then requires a posture from you of, OK, am I going to engage or not engage? And when I'm with my kids, I do my best to try to engage somewhat, even if I'm not in the mood to engage, because I want them to see, again, this intentional modeling. And for them to see that this is normative behavior, that it's good to be polite, it's good to be friendly. So whether it's your neighborhood, maybe it's your school cluster, getting involved in your community in some way. So we're coming upon the summer. So summertime is a great time to maybe, if you have a swim and dive team or a swim team, like a community swim team, that'd be a great way to engage. It's exhausting. Do not get me wrong. It's not an easy thing as a parent to be a swim parent in the summertime, but it is a great place to meet your neighbors. My kids play recreational soccer, and that's another great way to engage. And then for them to see how I'm in interacting with the people around us and how we can be missional in that sense, right? I don't think we've ever talked about being missional as a family, but have we served the people around us? Have we loved our neighbors? Have our neighbors loved us? Absolutely, right? So I think that's the first place. It's don't get into this mentality that everything out in the world is no good. Jesus calls us to be agents of his, of reconciliation. Mm-hmm. So how are we going to go and do that? He tells us that the world will know you are believers by the love that you have. And so how are we communicating that? That doesn't mean that we accept everything that the world tells us. It doesn't mean that we have to look like the world, but it does mean we have to engage with the world with the power of the gospel.
Absolutely. So with inviting our kids into a missional lifestyle, you think about teaching your kids how to be missional, and really it's not so much, just like what you were saying, Jimmy, it's not so much teaching, it's more inviting, like just doing it, being missional and inviting them into the process. So, you know, if you have a sick neighbor or someone you know who's suffering and you're making them a meal, having your child help you with it, or allowing them to see you reaching out or calling someone and praying for them, allowing you to be, you know, go into that uncomfortable area of, you know, of relationship where maybe one day you can share the gospel, and just allowing them to witness that. I think that that is the best way to teach your family, to coach your family in being missional, is just inviting them into the process. For me personally, several years ago, I was in a women's discipleship group, and we read a book called The Turquoise Table by Christian Schell. And that was transformative for me and my, just in how I approached living in my neighborhood and, interacting with my neighbors. I think sometimes when, you know, when we talk about being missional, a lot of times we think, oh gosh, I have to have the exact right words to share the gospel with my neighbor, or, oh man, I need to host a big event in my home and, you know, have all the snacks and all the drinks and everything like set out perfectly. And, oh, by the way, I got to clean the house. And, you know, we kind of complicate it. And that's definitely growing up in the home that I did. You know, my mom did not allow friends in the house. Like that was, she, it was rare if we were allowed to invite our friends into the house, because she liked everything to be just so. And so I kind of grew up in that world. But that book sort of helped me, The Turquoise Table, to, break those habits, and I'm still working on it. But I like how the, you know, she talks about how she has this picnic table. She painted it turquoise. You don't have to paint a picnic table turquoise, but she did. She put it in her front yard, and it was just a place for her to go, for her to interact with neighbors. And it wasn't in the backyard, it was in the front yard. And it just kind of it created a very simple way for her to meet with neighbors, to talk with neighbors, to eventually pray for them. And it, you know, sometimes she would bring small snacks to the table, or like some lemonade. So after reading that, I decided that I was going to, in the new neighborhood that we lived in, I was going to hold this like just chilly, it was the fall, I think it was September, October. So we were going to have a chilly lunch. And I opened up our garage, our messy garage, and just set up some tables and put some crock pots of chili out. And I put flyers in everyone's mailbox and just invited neighbors to our garage. And it was awesome. I mean, I had some neighbors texting me saying like, oh, I wish this would have happened before. I'm sorry I can't make it. I really wanted to come. And so through that chili lunch, it was really cool where we got to meet a neighbor that lived across the street from us. And he was an elderly gentleman who had had Parkinson's and cancer. So he was dying. But he had also just had a history in that neighborhood of being a hermit and, you know, not coming out of his house at all, not interacting with neighbors, sometimes being rude to neighbors. And that chili lunch, God used that time to kind of allow him to get to know some of the other neighbors. And he ended up passing away, but the people in our neighborhood ministering to him and being at his bedside as he passed, and he in front of another one of our neighbors accepted Jesus before he passed. And that was just a story of how like a simple opening up of the garage and hosting a chili lunch can just have amazing results. God can use that and bring a child home because of that.
And I think that's a great example, Sarah, of just being led by the Holy Spirit and recognizing that it's not us ultimately getting it all right and doing all the right things, but knowing that God is at work in all of these details to orchestrate his plan and to bring that to fruition. Mm. And one thing I really appreciate about a lot of what y'all have shared today is, you know, in my work, in talking with parents, a lot of times they feel alone, or they feel like, I don't know what I'm doing. I must have done something wrong for where my kid is at right now. And yet I constantly, I was saying this last night at the end of Tacky Prom, saying again to another mom, you know, you're not alone. And she goes, I'm not, you know? And I was like, trust me, I hear this all the time. Parents just struggling, knowing how to really love and shepherd their children. And I think that, again, is a picture of why we need the church. So we don't feel alone in this, because we're not, you know. One, we're not alone because we have one another, but ultimately because God is doing the orchestrating and he is leading us. But I want to ask one more question as we finish today. How do you shepherd children, your own children or the students and children that you have been entrusted in your work? How do you point them to truth without isolating them from the world?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a balancing act. You know, you don't want to shelter your kids so that they are naive and think that there's nothing wrong with the world. But at the same time, you don't want to just allow them to see or experience or hear anything in a way that where they start to love the world more than God. So definitely a balancing act. I kind of think of it sometimes as like your kids are sort of on a leash and you've got it close to you. But as they get older, you got to let the leash out. You know, you have to let them slowly experience things where they are just learning about the world, learning how to live in the world. But, you know, you can pull them back and coach them, but then you got to let them out again so that by the time they are not under in your house anymore, they're able and equipped to live in the world as prayerfully mature and equipped followers of Christ. But I think some of the things that are most important, and it's really simple, just raise your kids around the Bible. So I know Jimmy and I kind of harp on this, how important it is to have some kind of rhythm where you're having a family devotional time, just whether it's at, you know, at the dinner table or in the morning, somewhere where you can gather with your family and open up the word and provide opportunities to just talk. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a perfect, like question and answer session or anything like that. I know in my own household, it can be crazy. I mean, the kids are getting up from the dinner table and we're like, hang on, we're not done. And my son is talking about his favorite cars. And whenever we ask him what he wants to pray for, he says his toys. And it's like, okay, can you elaborate a little bit more? Are you thankful for your toys? Are you wanting more toys? Where's your heart in this? But having that rhythm of gathering together and just being in the word, whether it's once a week, you know, every other night. I know for us, it's not consistently every night. It's kind of, we're in a season of life where just whenever we can fit it in, you know, and as our 3-month-old gets a little older, it'll be easier. So raise your kids around the Bible. I would say also, if you have younger kids, going to the, speaking from, you know, working in a PCA church, going to the PCA bookstore, going to that website and just selecting all the books for children and just filling your home with books like that, you know, can teach them about theology, teach them about the Bible at a young age in an engaging way, you know, with like pictures and things like that. Maybe instead of a certain toy for a birthday present or in the Easter basket, getting one of those books every year, you know, just trying to fill your house with books like that can help direct your children to the truth of God's word. And then raise your children in the church. So coming every Sunday and being part of corporate worship, I would encourage families to invite their kids into corporate worship at a young age, whether it's once a month or whenever there's communion or sacrament, so that they can witness that, the communion or baptism, or it's every week, just inviting them into that space of corporate worship where they can see all of God's people worshiping him, in addition to being involved in children's ministries. Just being part of the church, serving in the church, just making that, honoring the Sabbath together as a family, I think provides a place where, you know, it's a safe place. It's the coming in before the going out.
That's good. I would echo everything that Sarah just said. That's absolutely right. Be in the Word, be in the church together. I'm going to keep on harping on this, but finding intentional moments to disciple and to lead our children. And again, it's not the sit down, let's open up your books, and let's go through this together, mm-hmm. recite your verses kind of thing, but a discipleship of life, right? So how do we handle stressful situations? And a lot of times my children learn how to handle stressful situations because I will say to them after the fact, how dad reacted was not the way to respond to stressful situations. We can do better. And so let's practice that. What could we have done better, right? Pursuing their hearts in that moment. And again, being ready whenever they're ready to talk and about it a little bit more deeply. Obviously with younger kids, that may not happen, but with older kids, there are thoughts there. There are four ideas are being formed. And again, if we're not being intentional to pursue that, then they're going to be left to fill out that void by their own voice, their own story in their head, or by their peers, or by what culture says. Again, what are those voices that are speaking to them? There was something that you were saying earlier, Kate, that reminded me of this, and I think it's a fitting that I mentioned this now. Years ago, I read this book called Veneer, and while I can't remember the whole premise of that particular book, there was one part that really stuck out to me, which was, so often we forget the voice of God even when he calls us by name because we are listening to so many other things. And I think he was referencing a C.S. Lewis quote, which I can't remember now either, but it reminds me of John chapter 6, right? No, John chapter 10, about Jesus as a good shepherd, right? I know my sheep and my sheep know me. And I'm not asking anyone at this point to question themselves or do I know the Lord? No, that's not what I'm saying. But it's possible to be in the sheepfold, in the pen, right? In the presence of the good shepherd and get distracted because you see a nice patch of grass and you're like, this is really tasty. And you know, the shepherd might be calling you. You're just so lost in your own world. And sometimes you might be preoccupied with some of the other sheep in the pen. Right. And those sheep might be your own children that you're talking to them. You're trying to get them to pay attention to you. Meanwhile, both of you guys are missing out on what the Lord might be calling you to or trying to grab your attention to. I think it was in regards to what you were saying earlier about a parent feeling like I'm alone. The reality is that as Christians, we're not alone, one. And even in our experiences, we're not alone. And so how can we support one another? How can we point one another back to Scripture, back to the Good Shepherd? And to find that life, you know, that he promises in John 10:10, you know, I've come that I might give life, right? As the thief comes in to steal, kill, and destroy. How are we actively pursuing that and even modeling that for our own children? So it doesn't mean that we get rid of the TVs. It just means that we need to be intentional about what are we watching? How are the habits that we're developing shaping ourselves, and are we willing to talk about that? Does my addictive scrolling at the end of the day shape my child who's watching me do this, whether over my shoulder or from across the room? It absolutely does. And so I need to be conscious of, okay, what am I scrolling through? And can I set limits even for myself? And even when I don't, and I acknowledge that, how can I be using this even as an example? Because we know that it's communicating something, right? And so maybe practical ways even around that, the death scrolling and the, you know, the binge watching, we set limits on how we watch, what we watch, when we watch something as a family. And when we do that, how are we engaging that, right? So in our home, we don't just watch Christian, quote-unquote, media. We're watching game shows. We're playing board games. When we go through the city, you know, we get on MARTA. Like, there are things that we can always teach on I don't just shield their eyes from, especially when they get to be teenagers, I'm not going to shield their eyes from the brokenness that is out in the world, because I don't want them to, one, I don't want them to not experience it and think that the world is peachy keen, everything's all right, because that's not the reality. And then secondly, I want them to see it and I want them to have questions and then ask me. And my son is great at this. My daughter is an internalizer, so I have to pursue that. But my son will ask right there in the moment, and usually in the most opportune way and in the loudest way where everyone else can hear. And it's really hard sometimes to be patient with that, but it's a great reminder to me. He's asking because he's got this question on his heart. And if he's got a question about someone who is asking for money on the side of the street or asking for food on the side of the street, why I don't give or what I give matters to him, so I need to tell him why. This is what my thought process is. And then what does the gospel demand of us? What does scripture demand of us? And how can we walk in this together? And certainly, there are certain things that you're going to shield your kids from, and appropriately so, because there's a lot out there that they shouldn't be seeing. It's not age appropriate. But again, as they get into teenage years, if they're in middle school and you're worried about them coming across pornography or sexually explicit content or explicit language, trust me, they're consuming that and will consume it at some point. It's going to happen, right? And let's not be so naive as to think that, oh, that could never happen to my children. That could never happen in my community. The reality is that there's already enough sin out there to condemn us all to hell. So how are we pointing in the midst of all of this to this Jesus who forgives sin, who eradicates sin, and is our hope in a very broken world?
Absolutely. And I would just, you know, add one thing to that. As parents, we've talked a lot about this today, of just having that humility to say, like, when I have erred or I have not acted perfectly. So to be able to say to your son or daughter, hey, this isn't about you. You know, if I made a mistake or if I did not lead you well, that's not your fault. You know, like this is going on today, and being appropriately honest and vulnerable within reason, but say, hey, I'm struggling with XYZ, but I love you. I care about you, and I want to come alongside you in this. And then also to, when you do see your child, you know, talking about being on the MARTA, we were in the city with my stepdaughter, Kinsley, and she has a really tender and sensitive heart, and we had leftovers, and she saw a man who was sitting, who looked hungry and looked to be homeless, and she really, really just, it was burdening her that she wanted to give him her food. And so we walked with her to do that, and, you know, and kind of guarded her in that process. But to point out and to really shepherd and cultivate, when you do see those positive, you know, attributes, and to see your child who, when you, not just seeing the things that you want to discipline or to punish, but really highlight when, oh, I see a heart for mercy, or I see a heart for justice. How can I come alongside and support that and highlight that and call that out? And that's a way in which you can support your children. But, well, thank y'all so much. I wish that we could keep talking. There's so much to say about the family and the church, but thank you for taking time to be here today. And we would appreciate you listening to our podcast, and we'll see you later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Perimeter Student Ministries podcast with Kate Kim is an 8-week podcast released every Monday through the end of May. For more info, please visit our site at perimeter.org/students.